This is Food for Thought. Call Carol at 866-823-1077. And now, it's Food for Thought.
It certainly is. I'm Mike Moore and Carol Lawrence of Red Arrow Diner fame. My co-host is away today and tomorrow. The show is brought to you by Casey's Rib Shack on the west side in Manchester and Integrity Health Coaching Solutions in Bedford and Londonderry, and soon coming to North Conway, up into the North Country, the White Mountains. It is 109 assisting me today. I guess I'd call him my Sue announcer, S-O-U-S announcer, and that's Chef Patrick Hall. It was a crackerjack in the kitchen, though. I'll tell you what, he truly is. Lakes Region Community College, Director of Culinary Affairs Education.
Absolutely. I'll definitely take the Sue's position on this one over here.
Yeah.
Yeah, we do a little bit of everything over there, you know. So
I have a feeling that you are a better Sue announcer or co-host than I would be if I were to work side by side with you in the kitchen as as a Sue chef.
I don't know. I sound pretty
good. Well, yeah, I talk a big game. Somebody came to me. Yeah, see, I mean, you know, it's all image, you know, and image is reality.
Yeah.
As perception is reality, as somebody said that, Marshall McLuhan or somebody years and years ago. And somebody recently on Facebook messaged me and said, hey, do you see they're doing this baking competition? You should get in it. No, I should not get in it. No, uh-uh. You know, if I got a cookbook and I got all the time in the world and nobody's bugging me, yeah, I can bang out some stuff.
Yeah.
But when you go on those shows, you have no cookbooks. You just do it from your head.
Yeah.
And stuff that you never made before.
Well, you know what? It's some of these, you know, cupcake wars and some of these people that go on there, you know, they've done their own cupcakes so they know the recipe by heart.
True.
But it's not like they, you know, and they might have developed the recipes. It's baking is different than cooking. Baking is a science. It's a formula. You know, you put in different ratios to come up with the right cupcake. And they probably did figure out that and sort of stuff. And they run with that kind of same basic. But once you get into other things, other than the breads and the cakes and things like that when you're baking, you know, beyond that, I mean, that's all formula. So you have a recipe and you follow that recipe and you measure it just right. We're cooking, you know, if you throw a handful of mushrooms inside, well, I guess you like mushrooms, you know, or, you know, you gotta figure it out, you know. So,
yeah, yeah.
Well, so I always call baking the dark side, you know. So,
oh, is that right?
Yes. You know, so.
So your wife isn't listening, I hope.
No, right? She probably is. And I'm going to be in trouble for this
later
on.
Yeah, you'll pay for that one at the beach. Let's say welcome on our food blogger from Kansas, spent some time doing her thing here in New Hampshire, but is back in Topeka, Kansas, and that is Linda Thompson-Ditch. Hello, Linda. Good to hear from you today.
Hi, Mike. Hi, Chef. You guys seem to be having a good time today.
Yeah, we always do. I mean, what's not to like about getting on the air and talking about eating and cooking and feeding people?
You know, I was listening to what you were saying about working in restaurants, and I have a story about that because I've never worked in a restaurant before, but back when Z was open, they used to do a celebrity chef series where they'd invite a person known to the public and you could come up with a menu to raise money for the food bank. And I did one of those. And so the day before the event, I had to prep with Chef Tom in the kitchen. And then that night I had to help plate the food and serve the food. And after it was done, I walked back in and said to him and his staff, I was like, you guys work too hard. This is crazy. I don't know how you do it every single night.
That's the misconception of it. And it's funny when students come in because, you know, they think that, oh, yeah, it's just like the food. You're making a sandwich. You wave hi to people and you made $1 million. You walk away, you know, but it's not. It's nights. It's weekends. It's holidays. And you're tired when you're done.
Yes. It's funny you mentioned that, Lynn.
Oh, we only had 3 entrees, you know, dealing with that night that people could choose from. And still, it's, you know, you're dealing with the orders and getting the right dish to the right place and the right, and plating it so it looks perfect and that everybody looks the same. And it's not, it's so nuts.
They say that the restaurant industry, you know, working in a restaurant is the third most stressful industry next to, I think, open heart surgery and Alaskan king crabfish, and is like number one.
Oh, yeah. I think I've heard that as well.
You know, it's not lifting rocks, but it's a mental game, you know. It's,
yeah.
You know, it's longevity. And
for sure. Well, Linda, you talked about Z. I remember when they did that promotion before they closed, and they approached me about doing it, and we'd thrown some dates around. And then I think it ended up closing before I could actually have my turn. And I think Tom was talking to me because I'd won a mac and cheese competition, and I said, well, let's work mac and cheese. And okay, that's cool, I can do that. And couple other things. But I must say I was a little bit nervous, even though I think they did most of the heavy lifting. I would come up with the recipes and would do, as you say, some of the prep work and some of the serving. So, but it sounds like it was a fun time.
Well, I did it because I was the food writer for the Hippo. So they figured, you know, people read my work every week. So they were one, you know, they thought it would be a good idea. And it happened to be around the time that the Julie and Julia movie was coming out.
Oh, yes.
Child and Julie, the food blogger that did her cookbook. And so
love that movie.
We did a Julia Child themed menu with, you know, Sol Meunier and Coco Van and Chateaubriand. We made Julia's recipe for country style pate was part of the appetizer, and yeah, it was a lot of fun. You know, sitting with Tom and figuring out the menu, having to adjust things to fit the cost factors that of restaurants that have, you know, well, they have to come under the bottom line, and this was for charity, so you know.
It's funny you mentioned that pate.
We made the pate ahead of time, you know, the day before, so it was all ready that day. It was a lot of fun. But it was hard work.
Oh, yeah. It was funny you mentioned that pate recipe because I just showed that video. We just did a couple weeks ago, and I showed that video with Julia Childs to the students because I think it's one of the best videos. You know, I grew up watching that too. And literally when she makes the pate in her pan, she's got sheets of fat that she wraps it out, the country-style pate with, and bakes it off in there. And I don't know if you recognize that or if you guys did that, but it's funny. And it comes out, but she just presents it. So afterwards, the best part about that is when she sits down afterwards and eats it, you're looking at her like, wow, that looks so good.
Well, it's funny. I actually blogged about the pate that I did a couple of years ago. This is her country pate, so it doesn't have the sheets of fat like that one did. I know what one you're talking about. This is more of a country one, a little more rustic. And it's out of her Julia's Kitchen Wisdom cookbook that she had. But after I got it done and I, you know, unmolded it and I was getting ready to take pictures of it, my late husband, the picky eater, he comes over, he looks at it, and he goes, that looks like dog food.
That's too funny.
Well, and I'm like, and so now I can never look at it the same. And it's one of my favorite dishes. Don't get me wrong. I love it. It tastes fabulous. But I'm looking at it. I always think of him saying that. Doesn't it look like dog food?
And I love that movie, Julie and Julia. It was just the whole story that somebody would go through and cook everything in Julia Child's French cooking cookbook, and it caught somebody. Well, she was a blogger at the time, and blogs weren't as big as they are now. And then it turned into this wonderful movie with Meryl Streep and Amy Adams. Was that
I believe right. That's what it was.
And it was a really great movie. And of course, having roots right here in the Boston area, out of Cambridge and Channel 2 and the whole deal. So it was a great movie. I really enjoyed that. So
what I liked about it was the Julia part was based on her book, My Life in France. And if you haven't read that book, it's all about how she started, you know, she went to, you know, how her whole career started. You know, she was, you know, in her late 30s, early 40s when all this happened and up to her 50s. It took 10 years for her to finish that first cookbook. And that book is all about that experience of going through that. And it's a wonderful read. If you haven't read it, you should read it. It's really great to see, you know, hear her feelings and her thoughts about going through all of that.
So there's still hope for me then. My cookbook's coming out, I'm telling you.
I didn't get my first writing piece published until I was in my late 30s either. So she's my hero. I'm like, yes, I still
That's
have
great.
Time.
and of course, she had an interesting career. She worked, I believe, for the CIA for a little while, did she not? And I don't mean the Culinary Institute of America either.
No. Yeah.
Well, she was for some secret service thing, but she said she was just a secretary. So
wink,
that's what
wink.
She said. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, what a great movie. You know, she would have been, I want to say, like 103 or 104 this week. I know she had an August birthday because I did a piece for Northeast Flavor Magazine on her 100th birthday and talked to people like Jasper White in Boston and lots of other people who really knew her or worked with her. I mean, for heaven's sakes, our neighbor just down the street at Cotton, Jeff Page, did some work with her. So she reached out and touched lots of people, and she never really took herself too seriously.
Yeah, when I worked at in Florida Keys, I worked at a place called Cheek Lodge. And the chef there got invited to cook for her 80th birthday party, and that was
is that right? Can you imagine that?
Yeah, Yeah, it was pretty exciting. I did some videos too. I don't know if you ever read her cookbook, Cooking with Master Chefs.
I did not.
And there was a guy named Mark Militello there. So when I was young, I was like 19, did some videos with him, you know, down in Florida Keys. So it was pretty interesting.
All right, so you could easily be called into a situation sometime to cook for a large gathering with some impressive people. I mean, how would you feel saddling up next to Mario Batali or Wolfgang Puck or something? Would you be nervous or feel a little overwhelmed, or do you think you could jump right in there with a lot of confidence?
I think I could jump right in there, you know. Yeah. Like I said, I'm not too much of a nervous person, you know. So, I got that going for me at least, you know. So. I'm not shy, I should say that.
It's the same way when I have to interview, like, a person that's got a national name. Like, I've interviewed Mario Batali and Emma Lagasse and Rachel Ray, and I go through that whole thing of I'm a professional. I get my questions planned, and I have to shove to the back of my mind that whole thing of, oh my gosh, I'm talking to Mario Batali, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I've interviewed all three of the people that you mentioned as well. The station I used to be at, we did lots of big name celebrities, and the one thing that Mario Batali was fantastic, and Emeril Lagasse couldn't have been nicer. He said, "Do you need any more time?" I mean, he was fantastic, and Rachel Ray was very nice. Oh, you know what? I didn't talk to her. I was confusing her with Alex Guarnaschelli.
Oh, yeah.
Right. I don't know why. But I do remember about the Alex Guarnaschelli interview is she was driving around her car bringing her kid to school, and the kid was just making all kinds of noise. It was like, now we got to time this out better next time. Ended up not airing it, unfortunately, but she's a great personality as well. All right, so we need to chat a little bit about your webpage there and back again, food.com. And before we get to that, though, I noticed that you had a little commentary going today about butter versus margarine. What was that? What prompted that?
Well, I saw on Facebook, I guess, a study that just come out in Britain saying basically that they've gone back, looked at all the evidence, and basically they're starting to think that there is no true evidence that eating butter causes the heart disease and everything that they thought it did. That actually what was the real problem, and we're talking over decades, you know, the real problem, as we're beginning to all know, was the trans fat from margarine is what truly can cause heart disease but they're not really showing any evidence, not so much butter, but the saturated fat may not be as evil as we all thought it was.
Yeah. And when you talk about margarine, what that is it's a hydrogenated oil. So when you have oil and you pump hydrogen into it, it solidifies it. So it's a chemical process that goes in there. So you're talking about a flavored oil that's been hydrogenated, you know, so that when you hydrogenate something, the smoke point gets higher, but at the same time, it's spreadable. So yeah, you look at it in the sense of, you know, with the fat content and different fats in it, but it's not a natural product, you know. So if you
and
if
it's
you,
got, you, I've run into the assumption. Now I'm a large lady. I could lose some weight, but you know, I come from generations of large people. It's kind of on my genetic thing. My cholesterol is fine. My blood pressure is fine. So I try and eat as healthy as I can. But when you think about it, which, you know, just logically, okay, what's better for you, hydrogenated oils or butter that came from cream straight from the cow, or sugar, or, you know, chemical sweeteners, or, you know, maple syrup right from the tree, or that stuff that they use and say it's maple syrup? You know, and when you think about it, don't you think it'd be healthier? Your body would process better the natural food.
Oh yeah, yeah, and you know, you'll see that a lot nowadays. You know, with the whole farm to table, and that's what we're cooking. You know, it's not going there. It's been going there for 20 years now. A lot of, you know, true chefs that believe in that. They've always used butter and things like that. And you know, like I said, I'm the same as you. I always say to people, I see it on my ideal weight if I was 11 feet tall. You know, so
yeah, exactly.
But you know, it's just moderation. I'm starting to learn that. It only took me 40 years, but, you know. So I'm trying to.
That was Julia Child's mantra. She was like, yep. She ate everything, but she just ate in moderation. That was the rule she went by.
All right, and if
it worked for her, it worked for us, right, Seth?
Yeah,
right.
Yeah absolutely.
All right, so I am not a big person. I'm actually thin and lean and small boned, but Here's the downside of that. It makes me feel a little too cocky that I can just eat this stuff. And if I just jump on the treadmill or do a couple days of moderation, I can drop 4 or 5 pounds without any problem. And then I don't look any different than I just did.
But I'm saying
that's going to kill me, though. I'm going to end up, you know, dead at 70 when I should live to be 110 based on.
This is the part where we start yelling at you.
Okay, go ahead.
Darn you. Yeah, come on. I walk past the cupcake and I gained 10 pounds. I look at it.
You know what, Mike? And it's that my late husband had this philosophy, too. I mean, yeah, he had heart issues. He was supposed to be eating low sodium and all of that. And he's like, you know, I mean, he did try and watch it somewhat, but he wasn't the best at it because his theory was he wanted to enjoy the life he had. And if he was going to have to be depriving himself all the time and all of that, well, what kind of life is that? That was his philosophy. He could have done a little better job at it, maybe added a little longer time to his life. But now when I look back, I'm glad he did what he did. I'm glad he enjoyed every bit of those years from 2006 when he had his first heart attack till when he passed away last year. I'm glad he did that because he did. He enjoyed life. He lived it as full as he could possibly do it. And I'm looking back, no regrets. He doesn't have. I'm sure he died with no regrets.
You know, you say that, and it's funny you said something earlier, because I'm big too. And so my wife, she keeps on looking every time I go get a blood, get blood, for the doctors and stuff like that. She said, what's your counts? And I said, the doctor comes back and says, he's like, yeah, your blood work's perfect. You just got to lose a few pounds, So she gets so mad at me and I just start smiling and I'm walking around, So, but like you said, sometimes you watch, like your family, your grandparents, whatever. My grandmother would be like, my grandfather's like, 80, 90 years old, and we got to put him on a diet. Who cares at that point? Give me some Manhattans. I'm going out with a bang.
All of my grandparents lived into their 80s and 90s, and most of them were pretty big people. My great grandfather lived to be 101, and they were all big people that were genetically geared towards, as we get a little older, we kind of have to start watching the sugar thing because our triglycerides go up and some diabetes can run in my dad's side of the family. So you start watching that kind of thing. But other than that, as long as your numbers are healthy and as long as I think it's important to exercise just so that you can keep moving because it can be really easy to get sedentary. And as you get older and the joints start creaking but you need to keep moving. So getting that walking in and getting that weightlifting to build bone and muscle strength, I think, is important as we get older. But other than that, throw out the stinking scale. Quit judging yourself about that number on the scale.
Hey, this is my saying. I said, hey, I've been eating for years, and look at me, I'm fine.
You're still moving. Your clothes are going to tell you when it's time to maybe back off from the
buffet. They make bigger ones. You just keep going up a size. That's all.
Now, you don't sound like a guy who's trying to lose weight, which you have.
I have been. Right. I've been doing well, but it's just coming off slow now. You talk about treadmill. I've been doing it for a week, and I haven't even lost 1 pound.
Then the first week, did you drop a bunch?
I did. But then you get hit that plateau.
Yeah, it's the water weight.
Well, when I was younger, it came off like nothing. Now it's, I recently turned 40, and I'm like, well, I better start watching myself and, trying to add some more exercise, and that's the thing, and in moderation, as far as cutting out breads and pastas and things like that, But I still, I started getting, so it made me creative. I started getting into baking low-carb breads and things like that and trying new things to try to eat that, to eat healthy. Huh. But, and it's been working, but we'll see. I'm still early on it. I say that, but then the weekend hits, and
And you're going to the beach today, and you're
absolutely
have a cocktail by the time the car's in the park.
It's my kryptonite. I'm telling you.
But if you try, that's the whole thing. Eat healthy 80% of the time, then that 20% of the time doesn't get you so bad. Now, I tend to not eat healthy maybe 50% of the time, and not so much 50% of the time, and that's my problem. I need to eat, get some vegetables and the fruits and stuff in and sweets are my downfall. So, getting away from eating, 3 pieces of cake a day or something like that,
You and me can rule the world.
King and queen cake over here.
That's right. Here we go.
All right. Well, we... We need to wrap up the segment and say goodbye to you. But again, folks can find you at thereandbackagainfood.com, correct?
That's right. I've got a great recipe for peanut butter granola bars that are actually healthy and a great snack for lunch boxes. So.
And that's why we didn't bring it up today, because it was too healthy.
There you go.
But do you also have a Facebook page? People can just punch in Linda Thompson Ditch, and they can friend you or follow you there, because you had the butter thing today, which I thought was pretty interesting and always worth discussing, because I love real butter.
I can't
tell you how much I love butter. It's one of my top three or four favorite foods.
Try eat some of that.
Butter.
Heaven is full of butter.
I certainly hope so, because I'm counting on that.
That's right.
All right. Linda, we'll talk next week. Have a wonderful week and weekend, and down to two pieces of cake a day, okay?
Okay, I'll give it a shot. Have a good time, too, now.
Same to you.
Bye-bye.
All right, there she is, former food editor of The Hippo. And
she's
of course,
fun to talk to. Yeah.
She really is. I mean, we didn't even talk about, as far as longevity goes, there's been a lot of studies done that happy people
tend to
live longer. I don't know what hard facts they have for that. In fact, along those lines, before we take a break, I found another longevity story here. Oh, here it is. All right. Good news for spicy food lovers. A recent 7-year study of hundreds of thousands of people has found that spicy foods may help you live longer. You probably heard that before.
Yeah.
Study, which was published in the medical journal BMJ, was conducted by researchers led by the Chinese Academy of Medical Sciences between 2004 and 2008, studied 500,000 men and women in China. That's a pretty good sample size, huh?
Yeah.
Between the ages of 30 and 79, and recorded details about their health, physicality, alcohol consumption, and their eating habits in regard to red meat, vegetables, and spicy food intake. 7 years later, researchers revisited the subjects and found that over 4% of them, or 20,000 people, had died, looking at factors such as age, marital status, education, exercise habits, and medical issues within their family history. At least once or twice a week, they had those that had chili peppers had a 10% lower risk of death when compared to those who had avoided spicy food. So, I mean, who knows?
No, it's one of those, the one thing with the spicy foods thing, mm-hmm. and we did, when we went, had a whole food science class at Johnson Oils, and we did a whole thing on spicy foods, and the whole main thing was capsaicin.
Capsaicin, yep.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's great for joints. And
anti-inflammatory, which is a big part of the...
they put them in creams and things like that.
Yes.
Yeah. So. And so it was great, but I mean, mm-hmm. it's one of those things that, and I guess it's good for your vascular, your cardiovascular.
Yeah, it is. Well, because when you think about it, heart disease is largely inflammation in certain areas. And so if the anti-inflammatory applies to that, and I'm not a doctor and neither are you, but it would seem logical that part of it would certainly be helpful.
Yeah.
Anti-hypertensive effects as well, anti-cancer, anti-obesity, anti-inflammatory, as you pointed out there with capsaicin. So it really is, and it may have an effect on the gut microbiota in humans as well.
That's the new thing with all the probiotics.
That's right.
The gut health and
raw milk.
That's it. Yeast and they say the worst thing is right here.
Coffee. Don't tell me that.
Artificial sweeteners.
Okay,
and
I don't use those.
White breads.
Okay.
Because they feed off of that stuff, and then soda obviously is the worst because it has a little bit of everything inside of it, and and that's what they say. So those things kill the good bacteria inside your stomach and leave you with the bad bacteria.
Mm-hmm.
But who knows? There's all these different products that are trying to push those probiotics, and this is the best one, and this is the best one, and some of them are so expensive. Talking about $60 a bottle, and
I think some of those are in my refrigerator right now.
Yeah, I guess like I said, it goes back to moderation.
Exactly. All right, we got to take a break. We're at 1:32. Food for Thought with Carol and Mike. Carol is back on Monday. Chef Patrick Hall filling in for Carol today and next couple Thursdays on 107.7 WTPL. The Pulse. We're coming right back.
Food for Thought returns after these messages on 107.7 The Pulse.
Hey, we're back live on The Pulse. We're at the Beacon Building broadcasting at 814 Elm Street, downtown Manchester, New Hampshire. I'm Mike Moore, and Carol Lawrence, my normal partner, is away. She'll be back on Monday. Chef Patrick Hall from Lakes Region Community College is here helping out and talking about all this interesting stuff, getting his take on things from a professional's point of view. I've discovered so many interesting food websites, and I don't just mean recipe websites like Food Network. I mean serious journalism about the really interesting stuff that you never would know about food.
Oh yeah.
And that's where a lot of stories that you see in the mainstream press eventually come from is, you know, websites like that, like Eater.com. Also, Food Beast is pretty interesting.
Yeah, you showed me Food Beast, and that was that's amazing. Yeah,
man, that's pretty heavy stuff. Yeah. So I have a few things here to lay at you for some consideration. This one kind of a fun one. Ramen noodle ice cream. Instant ramen company Nissin has decided to turn their dorm room staple into ice cream. The frozen science experiments are being served at the Nissin Cup Noodles Museum in Yokohama, Japan. For 300 yen, you can pick up an iconic styrofoam cup filled with ice cream and topped with instant ramen freeze-dried toppings, including shrimp, beef cubes, green onions, and egg. That doesn't sound awful to me.
It doesn't sound totally awful.
The beef cube I can do without, but...
ramen noodle ice cream, I didn't...
I think it's basic ice cream.
Yeah.
But the toppings are ramen products.
Ramen noodles, if you fry them, they make nice crispy. If you fry the noodles, you know, if you ever had, you know, those fried Chinese noodles, they're very simple. You could do it with spaghetti.
Yes. Okay.
You know, but that style of pasta, that ramen noodle pasta, uh-huh, which is great with, you know, soups and stuff. But mm-hmm, if you can also make that, it's all it is what, like wonton skins. Have you ever had wonton skins?
Yes.
Like, you had crab rangoons?
Yes.
That's what it is. If you fry it up, it creates that crunchiness to it. So
If
you took that and took, like, you know, the wonton skins, fried them up, and took them off, and just say you didn't stuff them with anything. You just mm-hmm did them and cut them into strips or something and put powdered sugar on them. You could eat them just like that, too.
Right.
So that would make sense, you know, for, you know, because you can coat things with them and all sorts of stuff with ramen noodles. But, yeah, it's one of – what was the company that you said?
Nissin, Nissin.
I didn't realize that. Nissin
–
oh, yeah. I thought they –
or is that – is that spelled the same way?
I think so. I think it's the same company. When you said that, I was like, they own ramen noodles?
Yeah, well, there are companies that own, like, Mitsubishi makes tuna fish and, you know.
Really?
All this other stuff. Yeah, so who knows? All right, so do you like ramen noodles? I mean,
I love ramen
were you in college at a time when it was a popular?
Oh, yeah. You can get a whole case of them for, like, a dollar. Staple, you know.
Yeah.
Hey, this is all built on ramen noodles right here.
I see. Okay? You're the poster child, huh?
Like, you cook them in a microwave, you can do anything with them, you know, hot plate.
Yeah.
It's great, you know, so it's like competition cooking with that, you know. So
big problems with McDonald's. I mean, this is the prevailing story on almost all these food sites I just talked about is – McDonald's is having some issues. They're being challenged, their business.
Really?
I think I just read here McDonald's will close 184 restaurants this year.
I didn't realize
there was
that.
A time they were opening that many a week.
Yeah, all over the place.
All over the world, exactly. Well, right as the Create Your Taste kiosks are creeping in, there's a second disruption to the McForce. It says here, restaurant-style table service at McDonald's occurring at 50 U.S. locations. The idea is that customers can punch in their extra, extra, extra bacon guacamole, pineapple custom burger, pay, go hang out, and then somebody will bring it to your table.
I did see that. You know, it's just kind of like you walk up and you just swipe your card, and it's like going through the self-checkout at that, but you just wait, and then they come over and they bring it to you. I did see that on the news, and
okay,
which I thought was crazy, but, you mm-hmm know, I'm not a big fan of those, you know, even – there's always glitches with the – you know, plus you gotta stay true to giving people jobs, you know? You know, that's what it's all about.
Yeah, you know, I'm with you there. I avoid the self-scanning, like, at the grocery stores because I'm thinking, well, you know, somebody probably would have a job if it wasn't for these machines.
Oh, yeah.
Now, there are times when if I got a complicated order, I got a lot of stuff to weigh or a lot of stuff, they got to pull the tab off and give you the discount. I'll go through the regular line, but I do it that way. I don't like the self-checkout.
Yeah, no, I always get caught with, you know, like the thing that doesn't have the sticker, and I'm trying to ring it through, and mm-hmm I'm like, come on, and then someone's got to come over.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, so there's always glitches in there, but that's
– Home Depot, another example.
Yeah, another example, but it's, you know, like I said, McDonald's, that's crazy that they're – I haven't seen them around here at all.
Well, they're starting with 50. Let me see here. While it's been in test phase in America, McDonald's is fully committed to the idea in the UK, where it plans to install table service at all 1,250 locations.
Wow.
So who knows about this country? Since changes to food aren't doing the trick for McDonald's, who announced this week, again, they're closing 184 restaurants, The sales of fancy sirloin burgers didn't meet their expectations. I didn't know they did that one.
Yeah, they did.
You heard about that one?
Yeah, it wasn't much different than a regular burger, like just one of the large
ones. Yeah, so they're gone forever. It says the company wants to spruce up the vibe, but it's hard to say if Americans can be wooed by ostensibly comfier waits in a booth if what they're waiting for isn't the Big Mac version of Chipotle.
Yeah, it's, you know, the other thing that I can see that's kind of their competition is, you know, places like Five Guys. And then there's, what's that other one? I can't remember the name of it. It was like a green label to it, but it's another new burger company. I'll have to find out the name of it. I'm sorry. But it's the burgers that they're coming out with nowadays, and they're kind of more of a fresh approach to it. And, you know, I'm sure there's more and more competition coming out there, and you're going to start seeing
more. I mean, at some point, a company like McDonald's has to saturate the market, and then there's no way to go.
Wahlburgers.
That's a reality show, of course.
Yeah.
Now, McDonald's continues down its path of financial struggle, and there is no McSalvation, the story says. In sight, it seems more details have emerged about McDonald's plan to downsize, perhaps for the first time in the company's history. It says, according to Bloomberg, which is a respected news organization, the chain aims to shut down 59 more American locations this year than it plans to open in an attempt to cut costs.
Wow, that's
So did you ever work at McDonald's?
I've never. I worked at Wendy's, though.
You did?
I did. Back when I was younger, yeah.
I worked at McDonald's in college for maybe 2 years. I have to say, I loved it.
Did you really?
It was so much
fun. I had two friends that worked there, and they said the same thing. And, you know, I enjoyed working at Wendy's. You know, I think Wendy's nowadays is way different from back then.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I get a burger at Wendy's nowadays. You know, I don't go too much to place. I'd rather cook my own burger, but I've been there recently. Before it would just be like this juicy burger like they advertise on TV. Now it just seems like they dry them out. And it's, I don't know if it's a new thing. I don't know what's going on over there, but I'll tell you what, I'd much rather eat a McDonald's burger anyways.
Yeah, and it was fun. I mean, okay, so I'm in college, and I know this is not my path. I know I'm going to be a broadcaster, so I'm just doing this. But the social aspect of it was so much fun. All the people that are, you know, 18, 19, 20, and you're just having a great time, and you hang out after work, and it was a great social case for me. Now, I was typically the guy on the window because I was the chatty one.
You're probably good. You're like, hi, how are you?
Yeah, how you doing? But and I've told the story before that I would I won't say reprimanded, but the managers would remind me sometimes less talk and more.
Yeah.
You know, pull out the burgers, get them. We got to turn the tables over. But I did wait on a celebrity with some regularity, and that was John DeLorean, the creator of the DeLorean car, who worked very close to the McDonald's in suburban Detroit where I was. And the other story was I was in a holdup there once and was tied up my ankles and my wrists.
Were you really?
At gunpoint, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, blue steel revolver right in my face.
All the years of being in there, that has never happened to me. That's one thing. And you know, that's the funniest thing about the restaurant.
Oh, that was real funny.
That wasn't funny. It is now. You can laugh at it now.
40 years ago.
But you talk about making all friends and things like that. That's the biggest thing about the restaurant industry, I'd say. Sure. Any chef could say is that, you go in there, you make some of the craziest friends, but you make some of the greatest friends at the same time. And it doesn't matter if you're working at McDonald's or you're working, you know, five-star place. It's a teamwork.
Oh, my God.
It's a team atmosphere, you know.
And it's so systematized. I remember they had a competition at the McDonald's I was at whoever would get the most perfect tills at the end of the month. In other words, everything balanced out, you know, with what the receipt said, with how much money was in the register, you know, would win a prize. And it was like a big deal about that.
That's half the battle of having a great staff is keeping employee morale. You know, when that goes down the tubes, then nobody wants to work there anymore. And then what happens is your product suffers, and that's the thing. You know, so you see all these shows on TV where chefs are screaming at you, and you know, if that was the real life, then people wouldn't want to work. You know that's who wants that? You know,
I thought that was all what Chef Ramsay was about, but now I see him on every other show where he's a touchy-feely kind of guy.
Oh, yeah. He's all nice. And
man.
Oh, yeah. That's all. You know,
I can't take the screaming. As much as I love the drama, I can't watch Hell's Kitchen. I just can't.
Yeah. And I'm not saying that doesn't happen. There's chefs that you'd have worked, and there's moments where that gets intense. But then if that doesn't get rectified, guess what? You have an angry mob against you as a chef. So it's more, you know, like I say, catch more flies with honey than you do with vinegar.
Yes.
You know, so it's, you know, it's one of those things that, hey, no one's going to want to work with you if you're like that. If I'm sitting there throwing stuff. and harassing you. Right. I mean, it's harassment. You're not going to want to work like that. You know,
the risotto is like oatmeal.
Oatmeal.
Dump it out. All right, we got to take a quick break. I'm with Chef Patrick Hall from Lakes Region Community College up at Shaker Village in Canterbury. We'll be back with our final comments here on Food for Thought. Just a couple of moments. 107.7 WTPL. We are the Pulse.
Food for Thought returns after these messages on 107.7 The Pulse.
We're at 152. Carol Lawrence back on Monday. I'm Mike Moore with Chef Patrick Hall on the Pulse 107.7 WTPL, and this is Food for Thought. Be a fun week next week. Looking ahead to our schedule, some of the guests that I'll highlight include, we were talking with Linda Thompson Ditch out of Kansas, and the restaurant that was one of my favorites on Elm Street here, Z. Did you ever eat there?
No, I've never eaten there. No.
Fantastic restaurant. I was open for a couple of years. It was sort of the start of the rebirth of really nice but not overly ostentatious restaurants. And Z was one of those, very modern, a nice spin on comfort food, bordering on gourmet. Anyway, the owner at the time was Tom Puskarich, and he will be joining us. We tracked him down, and I'm not exactly sure what he's doing. I mean, you ask anybody, and they would kill to have Z back on the block.
Yeah.
So, we'll ask him the question. You know, can Z come back, or what's your next project? So Tom will join us on Tuesday, in case you're wondering whatever happened to him. A gentleman by the name of Ethan Jenkins will join us on Wednesday. He had a very interesting experience. He did the Appalachian Trail, which, of course, begins in Georgia and ends in Maine. It's 2,200 miles. But he did it because of a dream that he had and because he was having serious addiction issues. And it came to him that he was going to walk the trail, and he did it for his, well, now late grandmother. So I heard about the story, and I wrote about it. The story appears in your new issue of New Hampshire Magazine. But there's also a food component to the whole thing. Some of the trail angels along the way, mm-hmm. that bring food out for the walkers.
Yep.
So Ethan Jenkins will be our guest next Wednesday. And looking ahead, we'll also have our comedy cold cut section a week from tomorrow, which is sandwiches, because love August it. Is sandwich month.
Absolutely. That's my downfall right there.
Is it really?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
What is your favorite sandwich?
We had that Garmanger class, like I told you. Mm-hmm. And my favorite sandwich is by all means, is the Reuben. But it's funny, those, you know, but that comes into play. And I was like, oh, this is my favorite class. Mm-hmm. Sampling little bites. And the other, we do Monte Cristos and croque mangers and all sorts of just like little sandwiches. And it's great.
You know, Monte Cristo is the one with maple syrup, right?
Yeah, it's like French toast, and then you have turkey and ham.
Whoever came up with that one, I mean, it's brilliant, but I mean, I never would have thought of that.
Yeah, yeah, you know, it's one of those things, and you have the syrup on the side. Oh, it's crazy, you know. I love the blend of flavors, you know.
So. And the Food Network had a sandwich guy. I mean, he was either the winner or a runner up in the best new food chef, or whatever it is, Food Network star. And I don't think he won it, but they liked him so much, and he became like their sandwich guy. I don't know if he's still around or not.
I don't know either. Yeah, no, I didn't get into it that much, but yeah, that's it's crazy. So,
well, another 2 hours has just slipped
flown
out.
Flown by.
There's 2 hours, folks. You'll never get back. My apologies. But Chef Patrick Hall doing a great job.
Thank you,
Chef.
Thank you once again. I love coming on here.
Oh,
so.
I know you do, and you're good at it. We'll see you next Thursday.
Perfect.
At noon, Michael Hopley Pierce will be here. It's Back to the Tap Handle Show.
All right.
All about the beer. Ken Kale, Kale & Company, coming up next. And tomorrow we'll be broadcasting live all day from Bank Chevrolet, helping out the Boys and Girls Club of Concord. I'll be there. Our Food for Thought segment will be devoted to helping raise money and awareness for the Concord Boys and Girls Club. I hope you have a great day. I'm Mike Moore, and I'll see you tomorrow at noon on The Pulse, 107.7 WTPL.